This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Leeds.
Oh, I tell you what, new year, new start. I think we're gonna do that every time we start a Leeds show now. We're going to get John McKenzie just introing the show with a bit of a stereotypical Leeds. Well, this is, of course, if you weren't already aware, the Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. We're back for 2020, same time, same place here at Love Sport on a Friday at 8 p.m. through to 9 p.m. It's me, Matt Beadle, with John, like I said, from All Stats, aren't we? Hello, John.
Hello.
Have you had a good, nice, festive period?
Yeah,
you're back.
Lovely.
Yeah. We're going to get into that, to be fair, in a little bit. But we do have a debut today. At least a debut for when I've been here on the show, Mr. Rich Hurst.
Now then.
Hi, Rich.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm good. Are you well?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. Yeah, yeah. Great. Excited about being here with a few Leeds fans talking about football.
Absolutely. First impressions of our beautiful, shiny studio.
It's fantastic. A bit small, but pretty good.
All good things come in small packages, yeah, as they say. Now, gents, the last time we were here in this very studio, I believe, was just prior to the defeat to Fulham. We were looking ahead to that game, of course, after that draw against Cardiff. And, John, you were slightly concerned about how the wheels came off in that game against Cardiff. And we were thinking, do you know what? It's OK. We've always trusted the process. And then it did go a little bit awry. There was a great victory, of course, against Birmingham. What a game that was. You've been on the show, been on the station, I should say, since then, talking about that particular game. It was followed up with the draw against West Brom and then, of course, the FA Cup defeat to Arsenal on Monday. But let's just do a bit of a festive recap, a bit of reflection on the games since we last spoke.
Yeah, it's been interesting, hasn't it? Because in many respects, you look back over December and you think, this is not great. We've not done the opening stat. One of my opening stats was, you know...
Oh, crikey. I can't believe we're back in 2020. We've already forgotten about the opening stat. Do you know what? It's because I got handed a running order late doors. I didn't have it in my head. I know, it's all right. Producer Paddy's pointing at John McKenzie right here. I'd completely forgotten about the opening stat.
I've got two, terrible. I've got two.
Okay, please.
A good one and a bad one. What do you want? A good one or a bad one?
Well, let's have both.
Okay. So the good one is Pablo Hernandez is back this weekend. Leeds have not been losing at any point in the league this season when Hernandez is on the field.
Okay.
Excellent.
Which is pretty good. The second one, which is the bad one, which is what I wanted to come on to, is we've conceded more goals in the period from the 14th of December to the 1st of January than we have in the rest of the season combined. So that's the...
Staggering.
That's basically the legacy of December for us. We conceded a lot of goals after having not conceded many. So, yeah, it was... I think from that Cardiff match onwards, it was just a little bit of nerves setting in on in the defensive side of the game, and we were just doing the thing that we do where we concede a lot of the chances that we... The good chances, I guess, that they created. But we looked this week on our podcast, actually, at the box shots created by the opposition during December, and I think against Birmingham and against Fulham and against Cardiff... We conceded about over 40%, 50% in two of those games, but over 40% in the other one of box shots, so shots that were taken in the box, which the league average is about 12 or 13. So we're just conceding everything that was going at our goal. And, you know, that's happened before. But I think that comes from just a little bit of nervousness setting in. Once you throw away a 3-0 lead that would have given us 13 points clear of third place, and you think, you know, we're 3-0 up here, we're not going to give it away, and then you do give it away, I think the nerves creep in. And then there's just been a few sort of defensive areas where we've been a little bit shoddy in as well. We miss a midfield as well. So we talked a lot on our recent podcast about how we rely on our midfield to get us out of presses from the opposition, and when they don't do that, when we lose the ball in transition to attack, then your team is just structured in a way that's completely inept for defending, and so we got munched a few times like that. So I think the that's the negative side of things. The positive side of things is we came out at the end of December and we were in first place, and we'd had a better 10 game run in 40 days or whatever that Christmas period is than any other team in the Championship. So it's one of those ones where you kind of feel we should have done better, but everyone else did worse than us, so in the end it sort of worked out all right.
So, Rich, you did essentially go lost, drew, won, drew. I like to think that we're sort of back on the upward curve again now.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, as John was just saying, you know, it was a difficult run of fixtures in December, and to come out with it with just one loss against Fulham is a pretty good run of form, I think. You know, a couple of the weirdest results I've ever seen. You know, the Cardiff game was unbelievable, and then obviously Birmingham later on. So there's some vulnerability there at the back. But yeah, coming out on top of the league, you know, going into January is perfect, I think.
Is there any surprise amongst you that it did go that way? Like you said, I mean, that stat to think that you conceded more over December than you had, or was it an equal amount over December than you had previously throughout the season?
So in the first 21 games, we conceded 10 goals, and I think in the four games after that first 21, we conceded 10 goals, which is kind of crazy. It was weird. We've talked about this before on All Stats, haven't we? That it's odd how we were a team who were actually very good defensively and we were struggling to score and we were sort of eking out results, to being a team that suddenly you just couldn't defend but we seemed to be scoring quite a lot as well. So the whole tenor of the team just seemed to change overnight after the Cardiff City game, and I think that's partly because of that psychological fragility. I think that there is something there. I don't like talking about psychology too much because it's really hard to quantify it. But at the same time, you know, those midfield problems that I mentioned, we've had since Forshaw's been injured, since Hernandez went out, since Jamie Shackleton's been injured. So it's just a combination of those two. And I think the sucker punch of having that sort of 3-0 becoming a 3-3, playing on your psychology, and the fact that we were already at bare bones in the midfield, just they came together, and that's probably what caused that change. Let's not forget as well that Pablo Hernandez was playing on the right wing, so he was a bit more of a defensive player, and since he's been gone, he's been playing just before he went, he was playing in the midfield area, in the central midfield area, and so we had two out-and-out attacking wingers, and I think that probably led to a little bit more defensive fragility, and also caused us to score more goals. So, you know, it's one of those things, we've talked about it before. So if you change something in the system, there'll be an equal opposite reaction somewhere else. So I think that's pretty much what happened. So, yeah, I think there's maybe expectations that something like that was going to happen.
Okay, well, it finished, or kind of, I guess it restarted. The year restarted really with the FA Cup third round, Rich. That was last Monday. And yep. A decent performance from the boys, especially, and I know we talk about stats a lot on this particular show, when you look at the fact that Arsenal just one shot on target in that first half, 37.2 possession. I think a lot of your, not armchair football fans, but a lot of Premier League fans who perhaps hadn't seen a lot of Leeds this season, watched that game and thought, oh, okay, these guys play some decent football. They know exactly what they're doing. They're set up in a specific way under Bielsa, and they're making Arsenal look pretty average.
Yeah, I mean, going into the Arsenal game, the one question I had in my mind was, you know, potentially getting promoted this season, are we ready for that? Those first 45 minutes proved that, you know, we've more than got the talent to compete against teams like Arsenal. We fell apart a bit in the second half, but the first 45 minutes were just incredible, you know. It was 15 shots.
I think that's the joint most that Arsenal have faced throughout the entire season.
15 shots and 10 box shots as well. So it wasn't just speculative shots. These were shots that were in the box. And we like you say, in the first half, we were causing them problems all over the place. Arsenal were sort of experimenting with a weird sort of asymmetrical system. So they had sort of three centre-backs. So they had Sokratis, Holding and Luiz. And then they had Kolasinac sort of playing as a left wing back. Yeah, and I think that just left acres of space in Leeds' left hand side, which is obviously when you've got someone like Jack Harrison, And you've, you know, we build up on the right and then try and spread play to the left. So there was just loads of space to work with. And in the second half, I think Arteta recognised that, and he just pulled Kolasinac back and then played Sokratis as a right back, basically a fairly standard right back, and that just meant that there was much less space. And I think, you know, yeah, Arsenal came out and they were a bit more solid in the second half. They were playing a 4-2-3-1 in the second half, which I think they're just a bit more comfortable with, and they just have better players. But even still, I think their goal was potentially quite lucky. They didn't create that goal. It was created for them, and it was bundled in a little bit. And there weren't a huge amount of chances, I thought, after that, or in that second half, that really meant that they out-created Leeds, I don't think. So it was pretty, I thought it was pretty even on paper, and it was, you know, it was like you're saying, it's just encouraging knowing that if we go into the Premier League, we will be able to give a good account of ourselves.
Yeah, it seemed to suit our style of play. You know, the Championship is a tough division to get out of. It's tougher, more physical football. So maybe Bielsa ball, you know, suits Premier League football. And yeah, particularly the first 45 minutes, incredible. Yeah.
Any disappointment at all about missing out on a trip to Bournemouth in the next round?
Definitely not, no. It's, you know, the old phrase is, let's concentrate on the league. You know, we made a good account of ourselves, a nice evening out in London for 8,000 fans, and yeah, let's, you know, I think a lot of our promotion rivals have made it through to the fourth round, so, you know, it's our, on our advantage now that we're out of the FA Cup in a strange way, but yeah.
Okay, well, we move on to a bit of transfer talk, gents. John, it is January. Eddie Nketiah has moved on. Your thoughts on this one? Jack Clark as well, of course, he has returned to Spurs. There's already talk about him going out on loan elsewhere. Nketiah, I believe, is on his way to Bristol City, or has already made that move.
I don't know if that's been confirmed yet. There's been a few clubs that are interested in Nketiah, and I guess they'll go through the same process that they went with Leeds, where they'll sit down with the clubs and say, give us your pitches and we'll pick the one that we like best. I don't know if that's been confirmed yet, unless something's come up in the last few hours that I haven't seen. Other than that, yeah, I think Jack Clark's back. We have four concerns in terms of the transfer market. One of them is obviously striker, now that Eddie Nketiah is gone. Then there's the central midfield area that I think a lot of us were much more worried about, perhaps, before the news that Adam Forshaw is back in training, however loosely. Those are the two main ones, I think. Then obviously you need a winger to cover for Jack Clark at some point. And there was news today actually that Ian Poveda from Manchester City, who's played at Barcelona, been at City, but was at Brentford for a while as well, but has caps for the England youth system pretty much all the way through. Looks like a fairly exciting prospect. So he's been brought in for that. So they're obviously looking at a longer term solution for that position. And then the final one is goalkeeper, given that Kiko Casillas' trial with the FA is still ongoing, and the potential that we might lose him. But then we saw Ilan Meslier play
made
for Arsenal.
Made a good account of himself. Didn't
he? I mean, you're the goalkeeping expert. I thought he was excellent in almost every area, really. But did you watch that game?
Yeah, absolutely. I thought he was very decent. However, I don't know. We like to do an ex-pros sort of analysis of Leeds on this show. Paul Robinson, so a qualified pro. With the fact that he played for Leeds as well,
but not the Paul Robinson.
Sorry,
was the goalkeeper?
The goalkeeper, yeah, Paul Robinson. Paul. Yeah. Which Paul Robinson do you think I'm in?
The left back. Who played the left.
No, not him. The former goalkeeper, Paul Robinson, scorer of two goals in his career, of course, one brilliant one in the League Cup at Elland Road. But he said that he thinks, without a shadow of a doubt, Casillas should return right now. And I don't know. I'm torn on this one because Casillas has been so good this season. I think it looks likely, doesn't it, that we've already discussed this, that maybe that ban is going to be upheld and he will miss out. In which case, get Meslier in now. Mm. Give him the experience. Get him on a decent run of games before he actually has to come in without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah, I guess there's a confidence issue there. If you play him now before the ban's come in, you're saying, look, we believe in you. Even when Kiko's available. So whereas I guess if he comes in when the ban comes in, it sort of looks like, well, we're just making do of a bad situation. But again, there's news this week that Leeds are looking at Alia Caprila. I don't know if you know anything about him, a Chievo goalkeeper. He's barely played. He's 18. He's played 13 times in the Primavera Uno, which is the youth league in Serie A. And it looks like he's coming through. So it looks as though they're doing the same thing that they did with Meslier, as in bringing in an understudy and having confidence in the keeper that they've brought in. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens in that regard.
OK, well, we're going to continue this transfer talk in a moment or two. We're also going to be speaking to Tom Carnduff, a football journalist at Sporting Life, on this, the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? And Rich Hurst here for his debut on the Leeds show. And I've got to say, I've just downed a delightful cornflake cluster during those ads. It's not a Leeds United Fan Show, I must tell you, without John McKenzie bringing in a box of cornflake clusters. Actually, we're going to have to start a rotor on this. You bring him in 1 week and I'll bring him in another. And whoever the guest is, they can bring in one as
maybe
well.
Maybe we could mix it up. I don't know, maybe get flapjack. Actually, I don't even like flapjacks. So
no, I quite like the cornflake clusters, to be fair. Right, they're an absolute delight. A lovely pre-show or mid-show treat, I should say. And speaking of treats, on the line now, we have Tom Carnduff, football journalist at Sporting Life, covering Leeds. Hello, Tom.
Hello, what a lovely intro. Thank you very much.
Not a problem, mate. Are you partial to a cornflake cluster?
Yeah, I think if I was given the choice between the two, I'd probably go cornflake cluster over the flapjack, to be honest. Yeah, sounds good.
Nice, okay.
Sounds like he doesn't like either of those to me. He wants a better offer.
Well, there's a Rice Krispie as well, isn't there? Those ones were quite good as well, weren't they? The old chocolate Rice Krispie ones.
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Okay, well, let's talk a bit more football, shall we? Yeah. It's great having you on this evening, Tom. We were having a bit of transfer chat earlier on. A few names I want to float your way, to be fair. There's been a lot of talk about Shay Adams this week, the Southampton striker, of course, formerly with Birmingham. He's touted to be maybe on his way to Elland Road. A few random ones as well. Of course, Jared Bowen, always in the mix, forever linked with Leeds United. I saw Glenn Murray as well today. John's laughing at that one. What can you tell us about the transfer activity thus far?
Yeah, it's the standard kind of Championship team needs a striker. Here's some names. Let's chuck them at him. Leeds are just one of quite a few. Sheffield Wednesday are looking for one. Nottingham Forest are quite aggressively trying to get one as well. And you mentioned Glenn Murray. It looks like he is actually off to Forest. So pretty decent, I think, for them and what they want. But by the sounds of it, by kind of what you've been reading, by the kind of sounds at Southampton's end, is that Shay Adams, as much as Ralph Hasenhüttl's coming out and saying he won't go, he's not allowing him to go, I don't think that's necessarily true. I would not be surprised at all to see him go. And if Southampton were very keen on keeping him, then frankly, they wouldn't be in the transfer market looking for another striker at the moment. The thing for them is having those numbers. Shay Adams wants to play football. He wants to get back scoring goals. And I'm sure Southampton want the same as well. So I really, really would not be surprised to see Adams turn up at Leeds at some point in this window. I think the problem for Leeds will be it will be late in the window. It will be, you don't want that Dan James-esque saga, but it might timescale again. And is it worth the risk? That's a debate in itself, and it could all collapse. But if it does go through, absolute top quality striker. And I just don't think Leeds are going to give up on this one, whatever the manager's saying, whatever's kind of said about it. There is still a possibility, and the amount of clubs who have asked for him, still are asking about it, suggests that this is a transfer that could well happen this month. And he is a player who is available.
Oh, are you still there, Tom?
I am, hello.
Okay, we'll just move on just very quickly. We'll come back to Tom in a moment or two. Your thoughts on Shay Adams, fellas, because I'm not 100% convinced of this. This is a player who, when Southampton signed him, I thought, okay, listen, he scores goals. But if I was, well, he scored goals for what, one season solidly for Birmingham, I think you would have been better off going for a Jared Bowen, not just because of his season this season, but because he's consistently scored goals in the Championship.
I think two things of that. One, first thing would be, is Jared Bowen an out-and-out striker? I don't think that he is. I think he's obviously much better coming from a wide position. He would probably fit in our team quite well, but then you've got the issue, who do you drop, Harrison or Costa? So there's that. The other thing is that whoever we do bring in is being played as a second fiddle to Patrick Bamford. So I think the reason why we're struggling to find someone, or I'm not particularly confident that we'll necessarily get someone that we want, is because you have to balance that off. You have to take into account the fact that Patrick Bamford is going to be the starting striker, and whoever is coming in is going to have to be happy challenging for that spot, or even just being happy with 20 minutes at the end of games. So yeah, I have no problems with Che Adams whatsoever. I think he'd be a good backup player. But again, I think we're going to end up with Eddie Nketiah all over again, aren't we? We're going to have Adams thinking that he deserves more game time, and that's the long and short of it, really.
Tom, you're back with us. I believe that was John there, just quite rightly, I suppose, saying that Leeds do need to try and avoid this whole Eddie Nketiah scenario of that second striker.
Time Eddie couldn't get game time, but the fact is that Leeds now know that the striker they want, the person that they want to come in, you mentioned Che Adams, would be an absolutely perfect fit for what they want. The defensive contribution, he's fit as well. He'll just suit that system. And if it comes to game time, Adams played, I think it was 41 Premier League minutes between the start of October and Boxing Day. So we talk about how little Eddie Nketiah played. I think he featured in all but three of Leeds' games when he was fit. So he was involved, even if it was from the bench. Adams is definitely going to get more minutes if he does come to Leeds. He's going to get, even if it is 20, 30 minutes, he can kind of provide that role as well, that when Bamford needs that bit of time out of the team, when the kind of goals aren't coming as they have done, Adams can go in because he's fit and he's ready to go in. If it's coming to playing time, he's definitely going to get more at Leeds than he will at Southampton. That's even with some slight involvement over the Christmas period. I think that says to me that the talk of him wanting this move potentially in the this month and his unhappiness at his playing time could well be true. If then Hassan Hüttl, a player who has barely played, he's thrown him in and he's given him starts over Christmas and he's played them in the FA Cup as well. So if he comes to Leeds, he's definitely going to get more minutes than he would at Southampton, and undoubtedly he's going to probably find his goal scoring touch again. So it's a move that just makes a lot of sense, I think, for all parties.
I'm just wondering, Tom, what you think a bad transfer window for Leeds would look like. I think obviously every Leeds fan thinks that the transfer window is bad, whatever happens, almost, and they have this sort of perfect idea of what a transfer window should look like. But what do you think Leeds have to achieve in this window, and what do you think would be the worst case scenario?
I think the worst case scenario is that a striker doesn't come in, and Leeds are pretty much having to go with Bamford, and maybe I'm not sure whether Roberts moves up, Harrison moves across. He tried to play him more centrally last season. That's probably the worst case scenario, that a striker doesn't come in. But I think there's enough options out there for Leeds, particularly at the moment. And we keep mentioning Che Adams, but the fact they're not willing to give up on that one says a lot, kind of how the player is and the availability for him. I think that's kind of absolute worst case scenario. I think that's the one position that you really look at and say someone has to come in. That could be vital. That could be the extra one goal, two goal that provides the extra 2, 4, 6 points, whatever, across the season that will be the difference. So for me, the worst case scenario is Leeds don't get a striker. Leeds do not get someone to come in and complement Patrick Bamford, not necessarily displacing someone to come in and provide that similar role that he does. And they're definitely sounding like a winger's going to come in. They're definitely getting a goalkeeper coming in with the whole thing hanging over Kiko off the pitch, etc., and a potential ban there. So it looks like it's shaping up to be a decent window. And I think it's just that striker. If that striker comes in, he could come in Monday and Leeds could shut up shop for the rest of the month. Nobody really has to go out from the first team. Nobody else has to come in, because these young players as well that he's had last year are really bedded into it. And he's got a decent-looking squad in what is a very inconsistent league this year. So it's just that striker role. That's got to be the imperative kind of move to be made before the 31st of January.
Just a final question from me on Ian Poveda. I wondered if you'd seen much of him and what your thoughts were of the rumours around him.
Yeah, he's kind of a player that you see glimpses of. He played for City at Burton in their second leg of the Carabao Cup semi-finals last year. I mean, they were, 9-0 up, was it, from the first leg? So it's fair enough that he got a go. But the fact that he was involved in that first team says an awful lot about the player that he is. He's seemingly that type of Bielsa-type forward, can play on the wing, does seem to have the centre-forward role as well that he has played in the past. I wouldn't necessarily say he could probably be a number 10, but as an out-and-out winger, it says it all, the fact that Orta and Bielsa do sound like they do like the look of him. His contract's up in the summer, so it's a cheap option as well. But the glimpses that we've seen of him, obviously you kind of see the UEFA Youth League on sometimes when it's on before Champions League games in the afternoon. And he does look a real talent. There does look a player there that that could kind of develop into something really good at Leeds. And you look at Harrison on the other wing at Man City, he's coming pretty good now at the moment. And you're looking at kind of that age that he is currently as well. I think he's 19 at the moment. You really need to start being involved more in the first team, like a Phil Foden. Otherwise, you're probably not going to make it. So it's a move that does pretty much make sense for Leeds. It might make sense for Man City as well to move him on. But he looks an exciting player, a potential player that goes under the radar. And as a Jack Clark replacement who didn't play much, I think he's going to offer quite a lot for Leeds, particularly off the bench late on in games. He could be that bit of difference as well. So a good move at what you imagine will be a decent price.
Tom, it's been great having you on, boss. Just before you go, you mentioned Kiko Casilla there and the fact that maybe there might be some movement for a goalkeeper in the window. Can you just give us a quick update on Casilla and just what we can expect to happen now? I mean, have you heard any developments on this?
This is a really kind of weird case, if you will, in terms of that there seems to be no update. The FA can't provide an update at the moment when asked earlier this week, so... At the moment, there's no suggestion what's going to happen. The charge was so long ago that there's nothing clear, basically, at the moment. There seems to be no suggestion that anything is coming soon, when we're going to get a date of a hearing, etc. So, yeah, it's one to watch, but it's one that's certainly kind of dragged out, which doesn't help anyone involved in it.
Tom, thank you very much for joining us. That was Tom Carnduff there, football journalist at Sporting Life covering Leeds. And he's right about that, Kiko. I just can't believe there's been no update on this, that no one really seems to know what's going on. This is bizarre.
It's a long, drawn-out process, isn't it? Yeah, it just seems to go on and on and on.
I think Leeds have probably contributed to that. I think they wanted to keep Kiko as long as possible over the Christmas period in particular. They wanted to get to the January window so that they knew what they had to do with it. I think it may be the case that the FA are dragging it on for that reason and saying, you know, you dragged us on, so we're going to make you sweat a little while before we let you know what's going to happen. But yeah, it's something that needs sorting out sooner rather than later.
Yeah, certainly does. But big game against Sheffield Wednesday. We're going to be looking ahead to that next here on the Leeds United Fan Show on Love Sport.
Giving your team a voice. Love Sport Radio.
It's the Leeds United Fan Show here on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, with John McKenzie from All Stats, aren't we? Rich Hurst joining us in the studio today as well. Just a very quick update from the Premier League, which we do not want to dwell on. Maybe we will next season. But it is Sheffield United 0, West Ham United 0 in the Premier League fixture this evening. So nothing really to report there. However, big game coming up for Leeds this weekend, playing Sheffield Wednesday. Of course, the two shared a goalless draw earlier in the season, but Leeds unbeaten in three league games against Sheffield Wednesday.
Just a good segue there, because that's Sheffield United, isn't it? You could have said, across on the other side of Sheffield. I know you love a good segue.
You're bang on there, mate, to be fair. And the fact that it's goalless as well.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Kind of a double whammy segue. Slap on
and
my
also,
wrist.
And also, this could have been us. We could have done that as well. You know, that's the old Leeds thing. Could have been Leeds versus West Ham on a cold Friday night in January. But no, not to be.
All right, this has been the Leeds United Fan Show. We'll see you next week. Cheers. See you later. Very good, John. You have slap on my wrist for that, mate. It's too many cornflake clusters.
it's just not like you to miss out on a good segue, mate.
No, it's not. Crikey.
You know I'm a big fan of your segues.
Not the first person who said that to me, John McKenzie. But listen, Sheffield Wednesday lost three on the bounce. Of course, they are 2 points adrift, I should say, of those playoff spots. On the line now to talk about the game, we have Elliot Jackson, football wire writer for Reach PLC and creator and host of the Championship Chat podcast. Hello, Elliot.
Hi there, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. Great to have you on the line. Sheffield Wednesday due to play the table toppers this weekend. Three on the bounce defeats for the Owls. Not the best run at the moment.
No, definitely not. Pretty much a nightmare after Christmas rather than before. Not a great run for Gary Monkside at all. Third after the win over Bristol City just before Christmas, and then a nightmare three fixtures away at Stoke, and then doubleheader at home to Cardiff and Hull. And it's not been a good run, like you say. You're absolutely spot on.
It had been, what, six games without defeat leading up to that? Yes, there was the victory away at Brighton in the FA Cup, which, listen, you've got to take that as a positive, despite the fact that Brighton was slightly depleted, but not massively. That is an upset, of course, can look forward to a game against QPR in the next round. But the fact the boys have been on a relatively decent run after a bit of a blip in October as well, it's been a bit stop-start, hasn't it, this season?
It very much has. I think at the start of the season, expectations were very much if they could be in and around the playoffs, which is where they are now, then fans definitely would have took that. Certainly after all the off-the-field issues with Steve Bruce leaving, of course, just weeks before the start of the season. So I think fans would have took the position they're in now if offered to them. But when you're third in the table and you look at, you know, Stoke away on Boxing Day, who of course aren't in the best of form this season, I think it's fair to say. And Wednesday have got a great record on Boxing Day, generally speaking. So to concede two late goals, obviously, in stoppage time, to lose that one, and then you're thinking, right, time for a reaction. Doubleheader at home to Cardiff, who've won twice away from, or had won once away from home prior to going to Hillsborough. And then Hull as well, another team that, you know, if you finish in the top six, it's a game at home that you should be winning. And to not pick up any points from those three games, I think the disappointment was etched on Gary Monk's face in his post-match press conference from the Hull game, just as much as it would be on any supporters.
Hi, yeah, it's John here. I just wondered if you had any explanation for those three games. Do you think, was there anything underlying those performances that you maybe expected to come, or is it entirely surprise for you?
I think that the obvious and most glaring difference when you look at the games before is Stephen Fletcher wasn't playing. He's been massive for Wednesday in terms of not only goals, obviously he's the club's top goal scorer, the second top being three goals, which shows the over-reliance on a 32-year-old that's out of contract in the summer. But also, there's been some issues with the midfield. They've missed Massimo Luongo massively, who's now fit again, came back into the team for Brighton, and he just offers a lot more dynamism compared to Hutchinson, who has been playing alongside Bannon. As good as Hutchinson is for games, pretty much for Saturday, for example, for tough away games, winning the ball back, recycling play, giving it to Bannon, when you're at home against teams that you should be beating at home, he struggles sometimes to give that dynamism that Luongo does. But up front's been the big one. That's been the problem for Wednesday. They've created too many chances this season and not put them away. And when your second goal, top goal scorer is on three goals, you're always going to have problems when Fletcher's not playing.
And Elliot, what's the latest on the financial misconduct charge against Wednesday? I'm interested in this because obviously we've been through points deductions at Leeds and such. What's the latest? How do you see this panning out?
So it's very much two organisations, Sheffield Wednesday, of course, and the EFL both think they've got a legitimate case. It's going to go to court. I can't see it getting resolved anytime soon, to be honest. It was a worry when it first came out, especially obviously with what happened to Birmingham last season, getting docked 9 points. But the fact that Wednesday, of course, it's a slightly different charge in the fact that what they've done in selling the stadium is not the problem. It's the date of which they've put it in. So they put it in the 17-18 accounts, but the land registry claims that they sold it a year later, which obviously means it can't go into those accounts, which means they failed financial fair play by about 30 million. But they've absolutely smashed through it. The stadium sale was needed in order to meet those regulations. So you know, it's almost a bit more dodgy in the fact where Birmingham obviously just smashed through FFP Wednesday and now embroiled in the fact that they've essentially, on some levels, committed fraud a little bit. You could argue that by the fact they put it through a completely different yearbook for land registry. I don't think it's going to get resolved quick. Wednesday are absolutely adamant that they've done nothing wrong and they've communicated with the EFL all the way through the process and they knew what was going on.
Yeah, there was some comparison to Derby's stadium, selling the stadium, wasn't it? Yeah.
That's the big difference. What Derby have done is the exact same as Wednesday. So the charge is not about what's been done, it's about when it's been done. In terms of if it's gone through the books the year the EFL say, then Wednesday have absolutely smashed FFP and therefore get done. Whereas if it goes through when Wednesday have claimed, they've used the loophole to their advantage and they wouldn't have broken FFP and committed any financial breaches, as the EFL like to put it.
One more question about the game tomorrow. Obviously, Gary Monk has preferred playing in a 4-4-2 in the last most of the season, but for the last few games in particular. Given that you've got a striker problem, do you expect that he'll switch that to a lone striker? He's played 4-5-1, I noticed, or a sort of 4-3-3 hybrid as well. Is that what you expect him to do tomorrow? And what sort of what will the lineup look like roughly?
Yeah, I definitely do expect it to be a more 4-3-3 definitely tomorrow. They have favoured 4-4-2 this season. I think it's Gary Monk's favoured formation. It has been when he played at Birmingham, for example, and other places as well. But as you say, with Fletcher out injured, they did go 4-3-3 against Brighton in the Cup, and the midfield blend of Pelupessi, Luongo and Kieran Lee worked quite well. They drew plenty of plaudits from that. I expect Bannon, obviously, to come back into that. But there's a few selection dilemmas for him. It's probably the first time this season where I couldn't... there's two or three, maybe three or four spots where I couldn't tell you for certainty what the team will be. I think what he does up front will be interesting in terms of whether he goes with Sam Winnall again, Jordan Rhodes, after you knew you could go with any one of those three realistically. And then in midfield, does he put... Bannon will come back in, I'm pretty sure of that, for probably Kieran Lee. But then does he go with Pelupessi or Hutchinson as the holding midfielder? And then at centre-back as well, they've sort of had... Dominic Iorfa has been such a revelation breaking through in that position that Tom Lees might not play. He didn't play against Brighton. Rest is probably the right word. And of course, the young lad at right back making his debut did so well. So does he keep with him? Does he stick with the same back four that kept a clean sheet? So there's two or three really key positions for once that are all a bit up in the air. And I suppose that's what happens when you have three defeats on the bounce and you're disappointing. Gary Monk was clearly disappointed. Said many times in that press conference after the Hull defeat that he had food for thought, and then they go and win away at a Premier League side. Yes, Brighton did make changes, but like you say, it wasn't a shoestring side they put out. They still had a lot of good players, and they made less changes than Wednesday did, to be fair. So there's a few positions up in the air, to be honest, centre half, striker, and what he does in the centre of midfield.
Elliot, you mentioned contracts there with regards to the strikers and Stephen Fletcher. Actually, yeah. On Stephen Fletcher, I just very quickly want to ask you about this because he looks like a new man. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I know he's had his Barnet done, but he looks like he's been down the gym. He's gone, do you know what? I'm what, 32 years old now. I'm going to get myself sorted. And he looks so good. And now the fact that he's not going to be in the side, he's got 12 goals this season, which I think equaled his tally the entire length of last season. It was the magic number for him in the 2016-17 season. We hope that he's not going to be stuck on, well, Leeds fans might be, but, you know, you hope as a Sheffield Wednesday fan he's not going to be stuck on 12 goals. Is it going to be, what, 10 weeks he's going to be out now? It's going to be a massive loss,
isn't
it?
Yeah, 8 to 10 weeks, yeah. Yeah, absolutely huge. As I said, the difference he makes, not just in terms of goal threat, but that's obviously a huge part of it, but just the way that Wednesday play, generally speaking, you feel a lot safer when the ball's going up front and, you know, Stephen Fletcher's there to hold it up. And he makes up for a lot of the flaws that the other strikers, when they've got a lot of options up front, but they don't have a great deal of quality, which has been the problem with recruitment. They've sort of been lumbered with all these strikers, but they really need a striker, which is a weird dilemma to be in when you think of the sheer numbers they've got in that area. But Fletcher's been brilliant. As you say, you're absolutely right. He's out of contract in the summer. It's been the best year, even calendar year. He was good for the back end of last season as well under Steve Bruce. It's been the best calendar year of his career, certainly since the Wolves days, where he hit 13 goals, I think it was, you're right in saying it, in the Premier League for them. And he's been fantastic. And obviously with his contract up in the summer, I would personally give him another year. I wouldn't give him more than another year, because generally speaking, this has been a bit of an anomaly season for him. He hasn't hit those numbers generally. But he's a man in form, and if he can come back towards the back end of the season when they aren't too far away, then he'll make a real impact. And that's why there's such an importance on them getting someone in January.
Elliot, it's been great having you on. Thank you for coming on this evening. Just before you go, a score prediction, mate. How's it going to go?
Sad to say this, but I think Leeds will edge it 2-1. There's not been a lot of goals, generally speaking, between the two teams when they played. Obviously 0-0 back at Hillsborough in October or whenever it was. But I think Leeds will edge it, so I'm going to go for a 2-1 win to Leeds.
Lovely stuff. That was Elliot Jackson there, Football Wire writer for Reach PLC and creator and host of the Championship Chat podcast. He's firmly in the Leeds corner, gents.
Yeah, that's good coming from a Sheffield Wednesday fan, yeah. Pretty confident about tomorrow.
By the way, they're without a clean sheet as well in their last 12 away league visits to Leeds, so the signs do bode well.
Well, I don't think those in glass houses should be throwing stones, right? So, yeah, I hope they concede, but we're not exactly looking like keeping clean sheets either at the moment. So,
no, absolutely not. Well, OK, it's my favourite part of the show. Next, listener questions.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
It's the Leeds United fan show here on Love Sport. We have got about 10 minutes left and it is time for your listener questions. Rich, big part of the show this, mate. I'll tell you what.
Yeah.
No holds barred, John McKenzie, for the listeners' questions. We are going to start with a question on Shay Adams. This is from The Young Peacock. Shay Adams on loan with a mandatory buy clause of £15 million. Good business or bad business? Now, I know we spoke about this with Tom Carnduff earlier on, but John?
Yeah, I included this question because that's the rumour. The rumour is if Shay Adams does come, it will be a loan to buy £15 million. That will mean that come the summer, we'll have to pay £15 million for Shay Adams, £15 million for Helder Costa, which is fine if you go up into the Premier League, but if you don't, you are in the Championship with £30 million of debt hanging over you and potentially two players who probably expected to be in the Premier League. So, is it good business or bad business? I don't know. Maybe it's somewhere in the middle. I don't know whether or not that will end up putting Leeds off. I don't know. I was surprised that we went for Costa in the summer. Well, I wasn't surprised, but I thought, you know, he's the big signing. You know, you do that, and then you think about the next season in the summer following. But if they do go for it, they're going for it, and that, you know, that always comes at a potential risk. That is, you know, you end up with £30 million and two unhappy players in the Championship the next season.
Yeah, I agree with John. The answer probably lies somewhere in the middle, I would have thought. But watching Marcelo Bielsa's press conference the other day, there seemed to be a bit of urgency with needing the striker to come in, which is unusual for Bielsa because he's normally quite laid back. And as we were saying earlier, you know, we haven't got a backup. I think we've got Edmondson in the under-23s, but apart from that, we haven't got an out-and-out striker, so it's a necessity. So I think that's the reason why we're going to go for him.
I think you do get rinsed when you leave something as late as the January transfer window. You know that your feet are being held over the fire, and there's not a lot you can do. And I guess the this is what I've been saying all the way through. The January transfer window is a time for desperation. Like there's no good transfers really that get done. There's not intelligent squad building that's done in January. Anything that's done in January is usually to fill holes that you should have filled in the summer, or you've been unlucky to not keep up. So for me, the risk is our own fault. We should have perhaps managed the Eddie Nketiah situation better. We should maybe have gone for someone who wasn't Eddie Nketiah. We should maybe have gone for someone permanent. All of these things are now, you know, these are the questions that people are asking about the current state of football. You know, big clubs just being able to do what they want with clubs further down the ladder and loan players out and then just expect them to come back. And they seem to think that, you know, they hold all the cards in these sorts of relationships. So it's a tough one. I think it's probably not good business, but like Rich says, what can you do? You're not in a position to be able to do good business. So
okay, well, Rich, Billy Reid, to be fair, has asked, with regards to all this transfer speculation, do you think Leeds need to sign anyone this window, or do you think fans, like yourselves, are needlessly worrying?
I'm unsure. I mean, if you look on Twitter at the moment, we're making comparisons to last January, where, again, we were top of the league at Christmas, we didn't make any signings, and look what happened. So, you know, we need to learn from the past. I think we do certainly need a striker. The other signings coming in, the wingers and such, seem to be building more for a future, whether that's in the Championship or the Premier League. But yeah, certainly the striker, that needs to be solved. I think the comparison is only to last Jan.
I think I agree with that. I think, it's, you know, we could go up without making any transfers, but you don't want to get to a point where you don't go up and then look back and think we could have done something more. And that's the issue with the lack of striker. We don't want to be getting by with playing a Tyler Roberts who seems to only be able to last four games as a striker, or Jack Harrison who's been playing fantastically on the left-hand side playing as a striker. We had questions on our podcast this week about whether or not Leeds could do something like Man City did when they played against Man United, having two sort of false nines in the shape of Kevin De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva. We don't have the players to really be able to do that. We don't have the midfielders to be able to do that, let alone good enough midfielders to play like that. So we need to get someone in, and I suspect that if we don't get Shay Adams, we're not going to get someone that anyone's happy with. But if we do go with Shay Adams, then you pay that premium, don't you? That's the thing. So I think we do need to get probably a striker just to be safe, but You know, that striker could come in and barely do anything for the team, and we still go up. You know, it's one of those funny things.
Tough one, tough situation there. Another tough situation is with the return of Pablo and Shackleton as a backup. Presumably, they take Dallas's place in midfield. So who, John, who gets dropped? Do you move Dallas to left back or bench him? That's from Joe Hill.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. Not to mention the fact that Forshaw is back in training. Now, Forshaw's obviously going to have a slower return than someone like Shackleton, I think, partly because Shackleton's younger, but partly because Shackleton hasn't been out for as long. But yeah, if you have Forshaw or Shackleton playing, Dallas is out of the midfield, where do you put him? I'd be tempted to keep things the way they are at the moment in terms of the fullbacks. I think Barry Douglas was excellent against Arsenal. I think he's clearly been working hard to get back in the team. Some of the signs were there for me that he was working on things that I was worried about. I think he was really good in build-up play for Leeds. He was good under pressure against Arsenal. And I think he's probably, he's our best left back in the classic sense of the term. So I wouldn't want to see him displaced. Luke Ayling, I think, is perfect for what he does. That's his job. He's excellent in that position, and I wouldn't like to see him out of the team. So I guess my answer would be, yeah, you drop Dallas from the field. And I think that will not be very popular with Leeds fans, because a lot of Leeds fans think he's been Leeds' best player this season. But I think the reason he's been Leeds' best player is because he's just such a good utility player. And so you sort of have a slightly different categories by which you judge them. But I would, yeah, I think I would just, I'd definitely bring in a midfielder for Dallas.
Okay. Rob has come in with one, Rich. I like this one. Is our poor record in London due to small pitches? Is this a thing? Smaller pitches in London?
When I read this question, I didn't realise that was a thing, but maybe I need to.
I remember, Highbury back in the day, of course, they prided themselves on the fact that they gained an advantage because it was a lot tighter, a lot smaller. Yeah. I didn't realise that it was still now a thing.
I guess maybe London pitches, there's space is a bit more of a premium in London, right? So it would make sense that the pitches would be slightly smaller. But whether or not that's the reason why Leeds play badly, I'm not entirely sure. I think we do manipulate space well, so we maybe don't get quite as much an upside, but I don't think there would be a downside necessarily to having a smaller pitch. It's not like we would be more vulnerable. We may be probably slightly creating slightly fewer chances or slightly fewer good chances, but I think that partly the issue with London is that, you know, it's a long trip to London. You have to stay away for a night, probably, or maybe even two, and I think as a result of that, just the disruption probably does for them. But
yeah, I agree. It is very strange, you know, and a bit of an anomaly, maybe a bit of a curse, who knows, but yeah, I think we'll get some results down there. We've got Brentford and QPR coming up, so maybe we can break that curse.
Yeah, big game against Brentford. They are buzzing about that one.
Yeah.
Might go along to that one, in fact, at Griffin Park. Fellas, Billy Reid, I think we're going to finish on today because we're nearing the end of the show, and this fits in nicely because you did play Arsenal on Monday. He has asked, which players in the Leeds team right now do you think would start regularly in the Premier League? Rich?
That's a good question. Stuart Dallas is one of my favourite players. I wouldn't have said the same thing last year, but he'd be certainly the first person who I think could play in the Premier League. Apart from that, I'd say Ben White, possibly Helder Costa. I mean, honestly, I think Bielsa will take them all if we were to get promoted. But yeah, certainly Stuart Dallas and Calvin Phillips are my two. Yeah,
I'd probably add Pablo Hernandez simply because he's played there for a lot of years and was very good. I think Jack Harrison, I think, would be. Yeah. I think he will be shown to be a good player in the Premier League. It was interesting. I think what I found most interesting about us playing Arsenal was that, as you mentioned, you know, we're used to playing teams who sit back against us and are quite cloggy in terms of defence, and Arsenal were a bit more open against us, and it really brought out the best of our team. So I think that we'll be surprised at how good we look in the Premier League, because the teams won't be expecting us to come and play really nice. I mean, they will, but they won't actually take it seriously enough to do anything about it, and we'll look good, I think. Yeah.
Okay, gents, it's been a thoroughly enjoyable show. It's been thoroughly enjoyable having you back in the studio. Rich, nothing but a pleasure. I guess we just finish on one, a prediction on tomorrow's game, and two, just where you're at now, because I know you said if we get promoted to the Premier League on a few occasions now, 9 points clear still at the top of the Championship. after that festive period, are we good? Are we okay? Are we still confident that promotion is finally going to happen?
Yeah, I'm more confident than I was this time last year, mainly because of the points difference in the table. But we know if there's one club that can mess it up, it's Leeds. So we've always got that in the back of our heads as fans. So, but yeah, I am quietly confident. 9 points is a great gap, and it's ours to lose as such, I think. Yeah, and in terms of predictions for tomorrow, I think it's a Leeds win, 2 or 3-0, I would say.
Nice.
Yeah, I think the next period is probably the big period for Leeds. I think if we can make that buffer bigger, that coming out of the next 5 or 6 games, I think that'll be setting us up excellently for the rest of the season.
Everybody wants a bigger buffer.
Yeah, no, of course. But you know, I think this is where we started. Well. This is perhaps where we started to struggle last season. I think it would be nice for us to actually come out of the December period, which, as you said, wasn't ideal for us. We've got a few players coming back. It would be great to have Adam Forshaw and Jamie Shackleton back. If we get them back, and then we can really start looking as controlling as we were at the beginning of the season, then I'll feel very confident that we're in a good position. I think a lot of the reason why... The fact that we went through December and ended up coming out on top was really big because we were missing players. So, yeah. And tomorrow, 2-1 Leeds.
2-1 Leeds. Lovely stuff. Gents, it's been great having you here. We'll be back next Friday, 8 p.m. here on Love Sport, Leeds United fan show. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter. We'll be right back.